the biggest blessing for me was COVID, because everything shut down and then people freaked out. Like, there's no chips, you can't get this, you can't get computers, you can't do these things. And all of my computer partners were like, well, we can't sell computers. We're 30,000 computers back ordered to Best Buy. Why can't you get them? Intel won't sell us 30,000 chips. They have to take care of all of their vendors because they can't get enough. So they can't take care of this person and that. They can't give us 30 because they got to spread them out. But a smaller company can get chips. They can get 500. I'm like, really? So I started a PC company. And now all of the top DJs and streamers on Twitch right now use my computer. Got friends that have songs that they put out, and I'm like, that's garbage. You know it's garbage. Like, would you buy this over that? The worst thing I get to hear from a producer or an artist is, I'm going to the studio to make an album, and they come out with 10 songs, but they only did 10 songs. Do you know how long it really takes to do like an album that's amazing? You might have to do 50 or 60 to find two or to find three. If you get lucky, you can get 10 out of 20 or 30.
I was going to start with Arabian Prince, back when style is high.
Hey, let's
go. Not slow and low, but fast time. But I won't. But I already did.
You already did it.
Arabian Prince, welcome to Masters of Craft.
Thanks for having me.
What do you know about this show?
I know absolutely nothing except for what you told me about the show. To be honest,
that's all you need to know. I know nothing.
Are
you a very trusting person?
I'm a big ham with a little bit of seasoned salt on it. So let's go.
All right, I don't know what that means, but I trust that it means something.
Yes, sir.
You're a really hard individual to describe, because you have your hands in so many different things. But when you go to dinner parties. And somebody says, oh, hey, what's your name? What do you do?
I always tell them, you know, because I play a lot of golf, so I'm always having to explain on a golf course, like, hey, so what do you do? I'm like, well, we got 18 holes, I can fill you in. But, you know, for the most part, I just go with the, you know, founding member of the rap group NWA, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, in parallel to entertainment and music, I've been in the tech space for 41 years. So it's kind of like, I just kind of leave it at that.
What was 41 years ago? Yep. What was your first toe dip into the technology space?
So it's a crazy thing, man. I remember we were making records. I made my first record when I was 16 years old. And I noticed something. Like, we used to, you know, party and drink. We never really smoked back then. We were just drinking and hanging out and partying. And at one point while we were touring, instead of wanting to go party, all the rappers wanted to go to the arcade. And I'm like, they want to go play games and bet on gaming. And then Coleco came out, the handheld Coleco, the football and the baseball. And after the concerts, everybody was just sitting around doing this. And I'm like the little entrepreneur cat. And I'm like, this is like the new crack. You know what I mean? Like, this gaming thing is addictive. How can I get in? So I literally, and it's the funniest story, people are like, why'd you do that? I'm like, because I wanted to know. I found out that while I was doing visual effects, I had taught myself how to do animation and 3D animation and visual effects. And I got lucky at a SIGGRAPH convention. Some people from Saban bumped into me while I was playing on this Intergraph computer system, like doing some stuff in 3D Studio Release 1. And they were like, man, you're pretty good at that. Like, would you like to work on a project? And they didn't know who I was. I was like, all right, sure, whatever, you know. And I'm like, what's the project? It was like, it's called Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I'm like, that sounds kind of weird. And I ended up doing visual effects on that. So that's how I kind of got in. But how I got into the gaming side was, while we were doing all of the Fox Kids stuff in the morning, I had to go to Fox and have meetings, and found out that they were starting Fox Interactive. So I started like going over there, hanging out with those cats, and ended up being a game tester, because that's the only way I could get in. When I wasn't touring, I tested games and moved up the ranks that way.
Have you ever watched the show Mythic Quest?
Yeah.
Love it. As soon as you said game tester, I was that's
what it was. And I tell, you know, all the kids out there, man, or the parents, like, let your kids test games, because all my friends who tested back then are now producers and executive producers of Call of Duty or all these games. They're making, you know, hundreds of thousands a year.
That's bananas.
Yeah.
Fast forward, because we did this maybe a year and a half ago.
Yep.
And when the world was forced to be virtual. So thank you for breathing all over me today.
Yes, sir.
Because you were in your, you know, your studio, your home studio. You're wearing a SpongeBob shirt. Hey, this dude's just like, you know, a big nerdy kid.
I still got on yellow.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
I got a little yellow on.
And it also reminds me of the first time I met you. This is in Cannes. Yep, I don't know if you remember.
France.
And like, you were like a couple of people ahead of me in line, and you were just goofing off.
Yeah.
And I was like, who's this dude?
Who's
like,
this dude?
Yeah. How do you describe who you are? You know, like, you're a big kid, but that's my definition.
I am Willy Wonka and SpongeBob. That's it. Willy Wonka, SpongeBob. That's me. With a little gangster on the side. Yeah, don't make me mad. But other than that, that's
what elements of each?
Willy Wonka, I'm a mad scientist. You know, like, you saw my space online. I do everything. I teach myself how to do new things. Like, I do everything from 3D printing to, you know, 3D animation to hardware tech design to software, you know, app design. I kind of figure stuff out. I remember I had to go do a project, and I was looking at, okay, I need to get hats and shirts. And I'm like, I can do that. So I bought a t-shirt press and figured out how to do vinyl cutting and all of that kind of stuff. So that's what drives me, is figuring out how to do things. And then what I do is I take that and show kids how to do it. Say, here's a career for you, or things like that. So that's that side. And the SpongeBob side is just, I'm a big kid. I'm never going to grow up, you know.
I feel more like Patrick. for various reasons.
Yeah.
But and I want to put this in perspective, because, you know, when you say like you're doing this for kids, or you build these things, like, it's not like you're just doing it in your garage and like goofing off. No, I mean, you are doing that, but let's talk about the scale.
Yeah.
You tell me.
Yeah, so we just built this thing for a company called Solar Impact. They have something called a Solar Beehive in South Central, like 60th and Central, I believe. It's a huge 50, I gotta ask them exactly how big it is. Basically, what they did was they bought 6 warehouses in this old district down on 60th, and it used to be the old Firestone manufacturing plant. So imagine a manufacturing plant that is now esports, film, television, robotics, you know, all for kids, Live Nation's involved, Riot Games is involved. Everybody's involved to do something for these kids in the inner city, and huge esports facility, like 80, 90 computer esports facility, like that will rival anything out there. And we put it right in the hood. So that's what I do. I do it there, and we're trying to scale that across the country. Matter of fact, around the world, because I've been in Dubai and Saudi, and we're looking to do the same thing over there.
It's funny, when you Google Arabian Prince, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of nervous the first time I went to Saudi Arabia, and I got there, and I was like, I think they're going to be a little mad at me about this. But they were like, we know who you are because your name shows up first in Google before us. So
that's a flex.
Yeah.
And what also down that Google list is a medical metaverse thing.
And I hate the word metaverse because I never liked it. But yeah. Let's say medical interactive. We're building an interactive web for medical to make it easier for people to get medical help, medical advice, speak and interact with their doctors and hospitals. Because right now, everything is either you go to the hospital or you go online, and it's very static. But there should be a more interactive way, and that's kind of what we're building out right now. And it's coming along. It's coming along. Hopefully, we can do some things and change some lives, because it's all about giving people access, and a lot of people don't have access to medical. So what we try to do is, everybody has I always say everybody has a phone. A lot of people have phones, right? And they don't use them for the things that they need to use them for. So if we can get people to do more things on their phone and actually give us access to some of their data, we can create healthier humans. Like I always say, we're trying to build better humans by making people more responsible and giving the information that we need to keep them healthy. Like, we don't want all your information, but just, you know, what are you doing day to day? What can we do to help you be healthier and things like
How
that?
How do you present that value proposition, right? Because I think whether it's a generational thing or geography, there's a distrust of data. And you know, sometimes I don't want to know what's wrong with me. Like, they're just going to tell me I'm sick. Like, well, that's the, you know, so there's these psychological humps to get through in that ecosystem.
Well, humans are greedy. So basically our vision is, we reward people, whether is it cash? Is it, what is it? You know, what is it that we have to give you for you to give back? Like, if we put, like right now, when you go to the hospital, they have all your information. You get nothing. But if you own your data and you can sell it or, you know, use it for rewards or things like that, like one thing I always say is one thing that I want to push once we get this thing done is free healthcare, in the sense that give us some of your data that will pay for your healthcare every year.
Right.
And, you know, people will do that. You know, you got to trick people.
Well, in the spirit of an NWA, right? Like, that's also very countercultural, right? You're fighting a machine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of like, oh, you're gonna give us free, or you're gonna give people free healthcare? Watch this, right? Or
yeah.
Like, you're up against a big conglomerate
that doesn't want that to happen,
right?
Right.
So, like, how do you navigate that side of it too? You know, in these paths.
Well, insurance companies want you to be healthy because they have to divvy out all that money for you to get, you know, surgeries or your medication and things like that. So we're working with insurance companies and going, hey, pay us to pay these people to be healthy. Now you save money in the long run. So they're like, that's a good idea. So, you know, we're pulling teeth, but we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a systems thinker? Are you like, cause I feel like you have so many different entry points.
Yeah.
To when an idea becomes a thing. Where does it usually start with you? And then like, how do you examine an ecosystem around whatever it is you're about to
get? Yeah, I'm very analytical. I'm an idea guy. So I had this company. I never got it off the ground, but I love the name and I still may do it. It's called the Ooh Factor. So I'm like, ooh, I could be playing golf. And I'm like, ooh, that's a great idea. And then I go home, sketch it out. And then from that point, I find somebody smarter than me to make it happen. You know, I'm not that ego guy where I'm like, oh, I came up with this idea, I got to go do it. I know that's impossible. I just come up with the idea, do the research, find people that are smarter than me that can execute that, build the machine, and let the machine run. And then I move on to the next thing.
Hey, Caleb, come here for a second. Because he and I were talking about this yesterday. Yeah, I was in Ralph's.
Yeah.
You know Ralph.
Yeah.
So you and Ralph go way back.
Oh, yeah, way back.
You know what's funny? Before I moved to L.A., like, Ralph's to me was hilarious because of Robin Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
you got
a car? Take us to Ralph's.
Take us to Ralph's. Yeah.
But we were just talking about, like, when you're a multi-hyphenate entrepreneur and you have lots of ideas all the time, like, where do you start? What do you put away with? What do you write down and kind of log in your idea bank and then save until you meet that person? Like, I don't know if you want to add to that, but, like, the thought process behind it.
Yeah, well, and I think that's the other interesting thing is because, you know, and we talked about this earlier, too, is just how, like, scatterbrained I think both of us are.
Yeah.
Medically, in a lot of different ways, like 30 diagnoses actually. But what is, you know, and what I've done is I've created a system that allows me to, like, just like you do, is I write down the idea, but I have to tell myself, you know, shiny object syndrome. So I have to, like, write it down and then, like, bury it and, like, shelf it until I can, you know, maybe think about that. But I think one of the questions that I'm very curious about is you just talked about, like, finding that person.
Right.
What qualifies that person? Because I think that's the biggest thing for me is, like, I have opportunities for people that are either smarter or are hard enough working that, you know, with the right talent involved, we can get the machine going and building. But then if you're so involved in all these other things, and we're talking about, like, there's this core focus that you kind of have to have.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have the, you know, the spinoffs. What allows you to make the spinoffs really happen and succeed without derailing the major thing? I think that's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think for me, I've been blessed enough early in my life to be associated with a lot of big companies, you know, the Microsofts, the Intels, all of them. So I come up with an idea. That's the first place I go, you know, like Qualcomm. Oh, I know people at Qualcomm. Ooh, call those people. And then it just kind of chips away that way. And then I have friends who are just brilliant geniuses, and I call them, and then we put together this, you know, kind of Marvel DC team and make it happen. And the cool thing about most of the things that I do is, I'll give you a good example. A friend of mine who's a publicist, we were at E3, and she goes, I want you to meet this guy. I know who you are. You'll get it right away. There was a guy who had a product called M-Cable, and basically what it was an HDMI cable that could scale video in real time to 4K. And nothing's real time, near real time. Like, you would not notice it, right? Like, milliseconds from 1080p, 720p to 4K in near real time. And Linus Tech Tips, if you know tech, you know Linus. Linus will go and kill anything if he believes it's not true. He tried, and he's like, oh my God, it works. Mm. So I saw this thing. The problem was the guy couldn't sell it because it's an HDMI cable that he's trying to sell for $200-$300. No one's going to spend that. I mean, after Monster, you know, Monster Cable was selling those cables for $300, and basically all it was a cable. Digital is digital is digital. I don't care what you do to it. It's still a digital signal. So anyway, I meet the guy, and I'm like, wow, this works. I told him, I can sell this for you, but you got to trust me. He didn't know me from Adam. I showed him some stuff, and he goes, okay, go for it. So I 3D printed a bunch of prototypes. And my vision was, take this cable and turn it into a dongle. Make it look something like a fire stick. So I did this. I made it look really cool and hip for kids. I said, let's go for gaming first. Let's put a little logo on it, put a little keychain thing on it, and they can plug it into their Xbox, PS4s, or, you know, whatever. And it went viral. Mm. Same chip, same technology, but it's not a cable. So that's what I try to do. I find people who have things that I can scale. I'm a very good scaler. Or if I have an idea, I find somebody who has something that's similar, and I take that and get them to let me have it, or let's partner and do that. And yeah.
I like body language.
Yeah.
And something just happened to you right now. Like, there's you know, this energy of excitement. Yeah. Like, what's the goosebump moment for you? Like, when does it turn on? Because, like, we all hear ideas all day long. Some of them are good ideas. And it's like, oh, my gosh, that's a goosebump idea.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what is that, you know, what's the tipping point for you?
Doing something that hasn't been done. Right? Because my company's called Innovate Next, right? So doing something that hasn't been done, or pushing the boundaries of something, like when something's stagnant and it doesn't break through that wall, that's when I get in. Like, the biggest blessing for me was COVID, because everything shut down. And then people freaked out, like, there's no chips, you can't get this, you can't get computers, you can't do these things. And all of my computer partners were like, well, we can't sell computers. Like, we're my partner company, iBuyPower, we're 30,000 computers back ordered to Best Buy. 30,000. And I'm like, why can't you get them? Well, Intel won't sell us 30,000 chips. They have to take care of all of their vendors because they can't get enough. So they can't take care of this person and that. They can't give us 30 because they got to spread them out. And they said something to me that, like, the aha moment. Mm-hmm. They're like, but a smaller company can get chips. They can get 500. We can't get 30,000, but the small company can get 500. I'm like, really? So I started a PC company, and I started selling PCs and gaming and streaming PCs during COVID. And now all of the top DJs and streamers on Twitch right now use my computer, because I was able to get in, because I figured out that, oh, they can't sell them, but I can get this many, you know.
And to Caleb's point, like, do you feel like you suffer at all ever from, like, shiny object syndrome? Right, where it's like, oh, am I done here?
Oh, yeah. Like, no. I'm very good at, like I said, I'm very analytical. I am very good at knowing when to rein in the horses, or when something's not going to work. You know, not saying everything I do works. There are a lot of things I've gone down and gone, that's not good. Like, let it go. I don't. One thing I tell kids and everybody, even when I talk to people in the music industry, never fall in love with what you do. Do it, but don't fall in love with it. Because you see so many people fall in love with their projects, whether it's tech-related or music-related or entertainment-related. They fall in love with it. They're like this. I'm like, this is just intellectual properties. It's coming out your brain. Just spew a bunch of stuff out. One of those things is going to work, but don't fall in love with any of them. And I think the biggest secret to success is knowing when you have a hit, as opposed to falling in love with what you just did. Like, oh, look at this art I did. That's amazing. Maybe not. But you have to be able to look at that one piece of art out of the 20 that you did and go, there's a rim rat. You know, that's kind of how I've been able to do, is not fall in love with what I do, but when the one thing happens, I know how to find it. Yeah.
What ends up being your trigger point for when you notice, like, this thing is not working, it's not one of those things? What's the point? Is it a revenue thing, or is it a, you know, just a point of the process that you're like, oh, this is just not, you know, scaling, or it's not, there's no product market fit? Like, what's the point?
I get bored when I get bored with it, you know, like, the I call it the Disneyland. When the Disneyland closes, I'm on a ride. I'm riding, you know, Matterhorn and Space Mountain, and, you know, I'm doing all these rides, and all of a sudden, oh, I have no more e-tickets. For the old people who know what e-tickets are. You know, it's kind of like, I'm not riding anymore. You'll know?
Right.
But, you know,
you're no more rides. Start leaning away.
I'm old. But no more rides. And it's like, put it aside. Maybe 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, maybe it'll pop back up. But most of the time, I move on to something else. And I'm generated, like revenue generated is one thing, but it's not always about the money. It's about creating something that hasn't been done. And then the challenge is making it go viral or making it something that people will buy.
You know, a counterpoint to the love. I think and it depends on what your concept of falling in love is. I think, you know, this is a reboot of a show that you're familiar with. It ran for 7 or 8 years. And the last, 48 hours, 72 hours was incredibly problematic.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what am I doing? Like, you know, but I think it was because I love it.
Yeah.
That I was.
But it's successful, though. See what I mean? It's the difference. You know this is successful.
Yeah.
Right? So you love it and it's successful. There's a difference with loving something that's not successful. Like, I got friends that have songs that they've put out, and I'm like, that's garbage. You know it's garbage. Like, you know, would you buy this over that? And they can't honestly say that they could buy their own music. But they love it so much because I went in the studio. The worst thing I hate to hear from a producer or an artist is I'm going to the studio to make an album. And they come out with 10 songs, but they only did 10 songs. Mm. See what I mean? Mm. It's like, so you got 10 hits. Oh, yeah, they're fire. I'm like, do you know how long it really takes to do an album that's amazing?
Yeah.
It's not just you did 10 things. You might have to do 50 or 60 to find two or to find three. If you get lucky, you can get, 10 out of 20 or 30. But I think you got to just be honest with yourself and.
Well, I think it's also like a thought line of you're never really done. You know, when I'm brainstorming with clients or, working on projects and I'm like, ooh, I love this, but let's keep going.
Yeah.
Because I think that I always think there's if you keep digging, you might find something else underneath the oil. Like, you know what I mean? And you never know. And I think that's part of just having an exploratory spirit, but also one that you can rein in from,
you got to rein it in
when you need to. So it's a tough balance. Like I find it to be, and it also just depends on what the thing is. Like there's things where we get super excited and I'm like, ooh, and you call around, or we were talking about doing, filming these interviews inside escape rooms, which could be kind of cool, right?
That's
it'd be
fire.
Like a version of Hot Ones, which would kind of be dope. And then Caleb, bubble burster that he is, was like, yeah, but the thing is, the escape rooms don't know, they don't want to give away the secrets.
Right.
Right? So can you really do it? Can you do pieces of it? So then it becomes this massaging of, how much do you love this idea to keep trying to, make the left turns and go in the side door and the back and figure out the happy mediums of the thing. I don't have a question there. I'm just
No.
I'm freestyling.
I get it. So you know what I think? What really helped me? My one of my biggest hits in music, right, was the song Supersonic. It doesn't go away. Like that song is everywhere. TikTok, Twitter, Nissan commercial. It was Fergalicious. It's Rap God. Everybody's using this song. And if people really know how I made that song, it's the most simple thing on planet Earth. It cost me $400. It was random. It was like the B-side of a song I did for the girls. And it was just done in an hour. And I used an 808 drum machine and a Yamaha DX7 keyboard with one sound. That's it. And the song is still one of the biggest hits of all time. And that's what reels me in, because I can go put 100 songs or 100 sounds in a song, but I know I did that with two sounds or two, a drum machine and one sound, and had a big hit. So I'm like, well, why am I working so hard? Let me get to the end game as fast as I can and make sure it goes. But I always say, you don't have to build the Bugatti or the Rolls Royce. You just have to build a car that runs, right? You can change the tires as it's going. You can put the rims on it. You can change the seat. get it going, running down that hill, and you can turn it into the Bugatti. Look at
right now, this is a Flintstone car.
Well, no, but hey, look at all the podcasts out there that are making millions of dollars a month now. They all started as a Flintstone car. And some of them, I'm like, I still don't understand how they're making money. And I'm like, how are they making money? But they just kept it going, mm-hmm. and it kept growing, and it kept growing, you know.
You have this DIY confidence about you. Which yeah. is like a good friend of mine, Orlando Jones, the actor.
Yeah.
He's, you know, when I asked him about his origin story, he's like, everybody sees something at some point in time, usually when they're a kid, and they go like, I want to do that. And it just sticks with you. You know, but this, I think when you explore creativity and technology and the things you have the way you have, there's also like roadblocks and things that come along the way. Yeah. There's imposter syndrome, and I'm not saying that you have any of those things, but like, what is it for you? Where do the Arabian Prince roadblocks come up internally? You know?
Wow, man, I don't have any. I always say that. Maybe it's because I don't get mad. I don't get upset. I don't have that negative gene to where like, you know, like it's not working. When it's not working, I'm like, eh, I'm that guy. I swear to you, I'm like, yeah, whatever, yeah, move on to the next thing. And I want to touch on one thing you just said, that whole, like, what made me this, right? Like that mm-hmm. ooh thing. I'll tell you a quick story. When I was a kid, my mother let me stay with my uncle on the weekend because he was a cool, hip uncle. He used to be gang banger kind of guy. But, you know,
did he have a cool uncle name?
Yeah, his name is Wayne James.
Yep.
We called it.
He was definitely like, Wayne, you can always tell, like, no, Uncle Wayne in and of
Uncle
itself.
Wayne. Wayne had the Dodge Charger, right? With the Hemi shifter. He had the van with the fur and the little, you know, like, I want to hang out with this guy. Cute, you know, blonde, you know, like light eyes, always had the women. That's my uncle. I got to hang out with him. And on the weekend, I would hang out with him and he would let me just do all kind of dirt, right? And they snuck me out to a Parliament Funkadelic concert, 1977. I go to the forum. I see the landing of the mothership. Now, imagine being a kid, right? Seven, I'm like 10, 12 years old. And I'm sitting in there probably high because everybody's smoking weed in the forum. And I'm like, and I see George Clinton. I see them land this mothership. And he comes out. I'm like, I want to do that.
Mm.
And that encompassed the music, the stage show, but also the visual effects. That's how I got into that whole thing, because they landed a spaceship in 1977, right?
That's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, all of that is me now. Yep. Because I saw that. If I had never gone to that, I probably would have played football because I had a football scholarship. So, I mean, it's kind of like that's what pushed me over the edge. My mom took me to the psychiatrist, because I used to sit in my room and listen to Parliament Funkadelic with the lights off.
Wow.
And she thought something was wrong. She thought I was devil worshiping or something. She brought the church over one time. No, she brought the church over to pray over me in the living room. And I'm screaming and hollering like, you know, ah! I was like, it was like the Exorcist. They're like, you need to stop doing this, listening to this music. I'm like, leave me alone. You guys are crazy.
Yeah. That's frightening. Yeah. But I would imagine that still exists when people encounter you today.
Yeah.
It's like, what? How do people misunderstand you, you know, here in 2023?
People think I'm very simplistic. Like, people think, oh, he's the gangster rapper dude from NWA. But then they find out, oh, he does tech, or oh, he plays golf, or oh, he does these things. And then I become very complex to them. And they're trying to figure out. The one I hate is, oh, I didn't know you were smart. Right. I hate when people say that. Like, oh, you're so smart. Like, I'm not supposed to be smart. Like, that's almost like an insult.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Just because I was a rapper, I'm not supposed to be smart. Or because I came from Compton, I'm not supposed to be smart. You know, and, you know, I just, yeah, I'm complex.
What are you doing about that dynamic today? You have a lot of, like, every time I talk to you, it's like, blah, 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 and the kids.
Yeah,
blah,
yeah,
blah,
blah. It's all about
creating
the
more me's.
Yeah, blah, blah, it's blah. About like, the kids. It's about, I hate the fact that schools and teachers tell kids you have to work, and they use the evil, I call it the evil word, hard. You got to work hard. everything you want is hard. You know, it's hard. Is hard. You got to do this. It's going to be hard. That lesson is hard. No, it's not. It's easy. Put that in their head. The opposite. Easy. Everything is easy. You know why? And I'm going to go to, this is the old man thing. When I was coming up in school, we didn't have Google. We had to read books, right? I had to go, computers? I had to go to like Radio Shack. That's who sold computers back in the 80s, Radio Shack. Mm-hmm. You had to go to Radio Shack to play with computers, right? Now everybody got a computer in their pocket. Anything you want, ChatGPT or Google or whatever, it's all right there for you. You want to learn how to do something? How do you think I learned how to do everything I learned how to do? Sat in front of my computer, I went on YouTube, and saw somebody else doing it. I'm like, oh, that's easy. So that's my thing to kids now, is saying, it's easy. What do you want to do? Oh, I want to be in the fashion. Okay. It's easy. Now fashion is tech. Before it was hard because you had to sit there and learn how to sew and do all of that kind of stuff. Now all of the designs are in computers. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is learn that software. So that's my whole thing to the next generation of children and kids and young adults is, stop thinking everything is hard. It's really, really easy. You just have to focus in on what you want to do and go research it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to edit that to easier.
Okay.
Only, and not correct, but I think, you know, like my, I have a daughter in high school, and I remember in her younger years, I'd be like, if she wanted to know something, look, I'd hand her a dictionary.
Yeah.
Right, like before, you know, because I didn't want to like do too much screen time. I was trying to balance it out, but I was also like, there are analog ways, and there are like certain steps you will have to take in order to achieve that thing.
Right,
it's easier than it used to be, right? But there will always be a roadblock of some sort. What advice do you give to people who are up against roadblocks along that potentially easy path?
Yeah, hop them, hop those roadblocks.
That's the easy part.
That's the easy part, because I look at it this way. We as human beings on this planet, now I can get deep, we can go deep on this.
Go for it. That's what we're here for.
We think we're smart as a human race, right? This year, 2023, we've accomplished so much, right? We've been to the moon, we're trying to go to Mars, all of these things, right? But yet we're not so smart because we don't know how they created the pyramids. We don't know how that happened. There's so many things that we don't know. We haven't seen the bottom of the ocean. We don't know what's really going on our planet. So often I say is somebody's going to push the boundaries. It's going to be one of these young kids that's going to hop that you know, roadblock. Because perfect example is Snapchat. I always use this as a joke. Snapchat was created by teenagers who were in prison in their own home. Probably overzealous parents that were looking at their phones all the time and like, you know, this and that. And he was like, man, I wish I could make an app that makes stuff disappear. $1 billion. So one of these teenagers or young adults who's, you know, being suppressed by their family or something or life is going to create the next thing. So that's why I would say there's only the only roadblock there is you. You are your own roadblock, because there's always a way around, over, around the side, go back, forward. You know, there's ways around things. And yeah.
Do you think when Mark Zuckerberg stole Facebook from the
Google
bosses?
I like that word. I'm glad you said it.
What did I say? Oh, stole?
You said, I'm glad I didn't say it because I might have to hang out with him one day.
Hot take. we're going to get canceled because he has more money. But when he was in college and it was literally the Facebook, do you think he imagined he'd be testifying in front of Congress a decade or two later, right? Like, yeah. I think that I like this idea of unintended consequences in things that we make. Uber, Airbnb, like all ended up changing local civic policy and rental, you know, agreements and like all these other things. True innovation disrupts. Right. And disruption is not like, oh, we do this now. Like, it is like, oh, we need to figure out we're the government. We need to figure out what we're going to do with all this cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Right. Like, but anyway, I say that to go, like, there are these unintended consequences of the things that we create. And are we prepared for them? And how do we prepare for them?
We're never prepared. Like, we're not prepared for ChatGPT. You heard the guy from Google left who created all of this AI.
Yeah, he was like,
the grandfather of AI. He's like, I'm out.
He closed his laptop
like,
quick.
Oops, my bad. You know, literally he said, my bad. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make this. And now it's going to be out of control. But we have to be out of control because the future is happening so fast. We just got to figure out how to unplug it. I always say, I ain't worried about AI. Just unplug it for right now, you know, but it's and here's the other thing. The problem I have with technology and innovation is we're labeling too many geniuses that aren't actually geniuses. Think about it. Like, we're calling Mark Zuckerberg a genius. Why? Because he made Facebook. Oh, he borrowed Facebook from his homies and they turned it into this billion-dollar company. That doesn't mean he's a genius. That means he made Facebook. Show me something else. Show me some Elon Musk stuff. Then I'll call you a genius. Like, Elon Musk is on another planet. There's a few guys like that, you know. Oh, yeah, Elon Musk and Richard Branson. These guys who continuously reinvent, and are successful. Those are your geniuses. Just because you made something, Uber, Airbnb, it's cool. You're not a genius. You just made something cool.
What credit do you give a Mark Zuckerberg then? If maybe genius is a heavy title.
I say businessman, like hell of a businessman who figured out how to make billions of dollars off of something. Because one thing I say, and I tell kids this all the time, there is no difference. All of these billion-dollar companies we talk about, Instagram, Snapchat, WeChat, Facebook, TikTok, what's the actual difference? They're all using text, visuals, and media to interact with the public. It's all the same. They're just doing it in a different way. So where is the genius in it? They're just kind of, what's the word I'm looking at? They're using us, what we want. It's what we want. That's what they're doing, right? But every now and then something comes out that's totally left and totally different. That's amazing. But, you know, it's, I don't know. I really don't know.
I think about, you know, the labels we give people probably undeservedly, like the point you mentioned. There's a good friend of mine, Nick Cooper, who's a vocal coach, mm-hmm. like Coach Beyonce and a bunch of other like people we know and love. And I asked him, like, what do you think about the state of music today? This, a couple years ago. And he said, I'm fearful that we're getting to a place where we're celebrating mediocrity. Mm. And I'm paraphrasing what he said. But, like, the idea that we can hear somebody singing on YouTube or Instagram and, like, oh, yeah, you got it. And, like, yeah. all your friends are the ones that are cheering you on. But, yeah. like, you don't, like, you're subpar.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know if that's fixable, but I think it bleeds into the credit we give people who make a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's not the level of quality or genius that we might give it.
Yeah. Well, I think the longevity shows the genius in it. So you have influencers who get really, really big, you know, from doing mediocrity, like you said, right? Mediocre stuff, they get really, really big following. But then the genius comes out, Justin Bieber, who is this little kid drumming, you know, and like he could have been medium, but he became large. Like he broke through because he was the real deal. So the real deals break through. And I always go back to this guy because everybody used to diss him and talk bad about him as a social media influencer. PewDiePie, right? Oh, he sucks. He's this. Why is he so? Because he's good.
Yeah.
You could hate him all you want. But he figured it out. Everybody followed him. They hated him, but he kind of did the land work. You know, he made it what it was to be a social media influencer.
Well, not even speaking to what Mr. Beast is doing now.
Oh, Beast, same gosh. Thing. People hate
it's
him,
absurd.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah.
He's putting in the work. He's working hard to get to where he's at and stay there. Even, what's my other guy? I always forget his name. The one who he colors his glasses, you know.
Casey Neistat.
Casey. Another one.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah.
Those guys are geniuses.
Yeah.
In their own way. They've built this thing that you gotta like or you hate, but you gotta like hating it, you know, whatever.
I think what's interesting to me is you were talking about like just young people and genius, and I think for me it's like, you know, because I have this young guy that I mentor that has, you know, he goes through what is the air quotes?
I don't want to know what that means.
To be fair, some days I feel like is anything coming across? But yeah. What's interesting to me about him is like, you know, he is, and he's about to be 16, right? And he, you know, his entire life has been like not good at school, not good at the box. Like he just doesn't fit into like the, you know, the ecosystem, which is kind of more and more happening these days. We're noticing that the box is kind of messed up for education, but you know, he's just really struggled in that bar. And he's, you know, been, you know, completely just suppressed on like, you aren't going to be good enough. And like, that's been my constant is like, no, you are.
Yeah.
It's like having that conversation. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because in the conversation of genius is like, how much of it is just luck and skill, right? And skill that can be learned and luck that is curated through repetition. Yeah. Right. And so like, you know, you have a Zuckerberg, and for him, it might have just been the right skill and the right time and the right luck early on.
Right.
Whereas some people, it takes a bunch of at-bats before they hit that mark. And I think about, we were talking about Alex Ramosi and his story, and he's a big entrepreneur who had, you know, built a massive a company out of almost nowhere. He had multiple different companies and then decided to focus himself on a gym, just a gym that he had, and it were multiple gyms that he had, and eventually figured out how to, you know, create this gym, scale it to a point to where he was making seven figures, and then was able to start licensing that. This is a completely compressed and short version of it, but eventually stumbled on, oh, I can license this and sell it to people for an excessive amount of money. And he just found that immediately people were buying into it. And what I think is interesting to me about that is he had all these different things.
Right.
And he was trying all these different things. And then he found the one, and then he had a conversation with the right person. And I think to me, it's like when I'm learning, and we were talking about, you talked about the car, and you talked about like literally was the same analogy I used on the drive here.
Yeah.
Was that like, I'm working on building something that I've been trying to build a Lambo, but I think I've got a junker, and I didn't realize that the junker can still take me from point A to point B, just maybe not as fast and not as sexy as a Lambo would.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, so I don't need the Lambo yet. I can maybe get it there, or I can just go to point B already with what I have. And so I think the conversation of a lot of the things that we've been having has just been on accident, but it's been because we've been trying to do something interesting. Right. And then the genius just happens.
What's your question? No, I'm just kidding.
No, no. As you would say, I don't think there is a question. Yeah. Would you like to respond?
Yeah. You got me. You got me.
So, you know what? Like, no, so this is a crazy thing because, like you said, is it working hard, building, repetition, whatever? There's actually genius in that too. Because let's look at a basketball team. You got LeBron James, true genius on the basketball court. But you got all these bit players that have their role. And some of these guys are geniuses because they're able to work with a genius. You got to be a genius to work with a genius sometimes. Mm. In order to hold yourself back or know where to be or know what to do. So, you know, for me, it's the person that can circumvent all of these, you know, downsides, and it's the whole Super Mario thing. You're hopping on mushrooms, you're hopping over this barrier, you're falling down this chute, but then you bounce back up. I think that's the true genius, is landing on the top. Nobody asked you how you got there, maybe in your documentary, but no one asked how, you know, Zuckerberg actually got there. He's there, Facebook. You know, like you said, his buddy said something, and he's like, oh, I can scale this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right or wrong, he did it, and now it's this, you know, trillion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar thing. So there's genius in that, but we also got to, like, give that blueprint. Just keep showing people that. Like I said, I always show people that just do it. Like, if it don't work, what's going to hurt you? Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. That whole analogy of don't put all your – I hate that analogy. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Like, why not? Give me 100 eggs. If I drop it, some of the eggs going to break, but I still got 87 eggs.
Right.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
Let me just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. One of those things is going to go. Then I can eat.
What's on your egg wish list? Like, what's something that you have been noodling on that you're like, oh, man, I can't wait, or I'm waiting for the right partner, or?
Well, the one we just talked about off mic, which we're going to talk about on mic now, is, you know, I'm now raising $150 million diversity fund because I'm sick and tired of, and I often say this, I'm sick and tired of watching the commercials and watching all of the big companies. We're for diversity, and they show a bunch of diverse people walking in slow motion. Right, we support diversity. We're giving money to diversity, and then the report comes out, and 1% of all the money that was pledged to go to diversity goes to diversity.
Yeah.
They spend more money on the commercials. Like, seriously, they spend more money on the commercial for diversity than the money they use to give to diversity. So I want to change that. So we're going to raise this $150 million fund, and I'm from the hood. I'm going to the hood. Mm. I'm going to the inner cities. And I'm going to women and rural communities and find those diamonds in the rough. Like you said, they're out there, right? Somebody, you know, has a company that's only making $25,000, $30,000 a year. Somebody might call that a failure, but they're doing it with their own money. And they're bootstrapping and struggling. All they need to do is scale. You may not have to give them $1 million. You may only have to give them $100,000. And you could take that $25,000 to a $1 million company. That's what I want to do. I want to do a whole bunch of those as opposed to giving some startup $10 million or, what, you know.
With that ambitious goal, what new skills do you need to acquire?
For me, I don't think I need any new skills. I just need to, because I've been doing this all my whole life in tech and, you know, mentoring startups and all of these things. I think one thing I have to do is, I think the biggest skill I need to do is say no. That's my new skill. It's like, you know, if you're going to be sitting on a $150 million fund, you're going to have to say no to some people that you really care about. I care about you, but that ain't the one.
Right.
Like, I'll show you how to get it there. Or maybe that ain't ever going to be the one. Maybe you should go another route. I've had to tell companies that, like, you know, I've said that to people, like, don't do that.
It's tough. Like, it's, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, I always try to go, no, but here's
yeah.
Look at this link or watch this video or like talk to my boy, like whomever, whatever the thing is. It's hard to say, it's hard for me to just say no and leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, because I want to help, but I'm also like, it takes time to also like even do those, like, go this way for, you know, for a second.
Yeah.
Speaking of going this way for a second, you're going to go away now. We thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys. And I'm glad we got into this like deep conversation. I don't like basic, like stupid questions. I like going deep, and we got deep. So
yeah,
I like
yeah.
that.
No, I tell people all the time, it's like, I don't like having and then what happened conversations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like a little bit of that, because I think to provide context and like all the things.
Do I have time enough? Do I have time to say one last thing? I want to give some startups a piece of advice.
Ooh.
So this is something I always say. And I'll give you the answer first. Here's the answer. The punchline is, don't buy a waterfall wall. That's the punchline. So really quickly, I went to a startup party in Santa Monica. I won't name the startup because they're no longer with us. They just got funded, a lot of money, really nice office, right? I'm talking to a guy that had like shrimp and all the good food and everything. Everybody's here celebrating. And I'm talking to this guy and I'm leaning on a wall. Why is my arm wet? Like, they got a waterfall wall. Like, how much did that cost?
Wow.
Don't buy a waterfall wall because they're not here anymore. That waterfall wall is probably another engineer or two that they could have paid for. So they got the money. They bought the big office. They did all this stuff. And now they're not here. So don't buy a waterfall wall.
Yeah, I think money, I don't know. Like, it never goes as far as you think it's going to go.
That's why I always pretend I'm broke.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I got money, I pretend I'm broke. I try to do it with nothing or near nothing because I think you're more proud of it. You tend to work harder. And I hate to use the word hard, but you do. Like, I gotta stretch this. And then you find out you can't stretch anymore. Okay, now I'll throw some money at it. Instead of throw a bunch of money at it.
Right.
Let me see how far I can get before I throw money at it. Yeah.
Arabian Prince.
Appreciate
back
you.
Back with a stylist hype.
Not slow and low. It's a fast hype.
Thank you for joining us on Masters of Craft.
I appreciate you. Thanks.
Amazing.
Always. Yeah.